let's look at this chart, which will help describe how the scheme worked. Here you have the six judge defendants with arrows between them. The arrows reflect that they worked together. And so you have one between Sullivan and Singletary, but it also flows from Singletary to Muldrew and from Larry to Times. All of them worked together. And that's because it worked, they all worked together in making and honoring each other's requests to fix tickets. So, for example, if a friend of Judge Sullivan called him and said, "I have a ticket, I don't know what court, I don't know who the judge is, but can you help me with the ticket?" And that ticket was being heard in front of Judge Larry, Judge Sullivan, through his personal assistant, would communicate that request to Judge Larry. And Judge Larry would honor it, because the next time, Judge Larry would have a request that Judge Sullivan would honor. And I have an example of that to share with you right now. Two tickets. You will hear a phone call between a friend of Judge Sullivan's and Judge Sullivan. This friend got a ticket for leaving the scene of an accident. And on the phone call, the friend expresses concern to Judge Sullivan. "It's a lot of money. I'm unemployed. I don't have the money to pay this ticket." And Judge Sullivan assures him, "Don't worry about it. I got it. Don't worry about it." Then the friend also says, "Well, are you going to be there?" And Judge Sullivan says, "No, I'm going to be down the shore." "But that don't matter. You're good." And it don't matter because he communicated the fix to Judge Larry. And Judge Larry dismissed Judge Sullivan's friend's tickets. On another time, Judge Larry requested a fix for his nephew's careless driving ticket. That nephew's case was being heard by Judge Sullivan. And what do you know? Judge Sullivan found him not guilty. That's how they worked together. That's how the reciprocity worked. The next layer is ticket holders. You will meet a lot of ticket holders at this trial. And they contacted the judges directly. Sometimes they would call on the phone. Sometimes they would meet in person with the judge, and they would tell the judge about their ticket. And that's how the fix began. Sometimes it wouldn't be the ticket holder himself or herself, it would be the ticket holder's father or brother or friend. And that's how the ticket holders would directly contact these various judges. And you'll meet those ticket holders. We also have local politicians. These local politicians, and you'll hear from some of them and hear about some of them. They're ward leaders here in Philadelphia. They're staff persons from various council persons' offices. And they, too, would contact the judges, sometimes by phone. Sometimes they would meet the judges right in their chambers. And they would give names and tickets to the judges of constituents, of people who wanted, the politicians were hoping that the fix would go through. And the judges received these requests and pass them along. I want to take a moment to talk about a man named William Hurd, often called Billy by a lot of people who worked at the courthouse. Billy Hurd was a high-level administrator at Traffic Court. He was the director of records. And he had a lot of people that he supervised. And you'll hear that a lot of local politicians went directly to Hurd as well. People from the Philadelphia Democratic City Committee, ward leaders would call her, drop off their tickets for constituents, for friends. And also you'll hear that ticket holders that were friends of Hurd went to him as well with their tickets. Now, Billy Hurd, you will hear, worked at the traffic court for a long time, and he had access to all the judges. He was a high-level administrator. He was friends with many of the judges. He would have lunch with them. And when he would get tickets from the local politicians or the ticket holders, what did he do? He would distribute them to the various judges. So whoever was hearing that particular case, Judge Hurd would go up to Billy Hurd would go up to the personals or the staff persons and say, "Hey, here's the ticket. The fix was in." And the judges received and honored those requests from Billy Hurd. I'm going to add another layer. This, you see, a man named Eddie Alfano. and Perry, Fortunato Perry. Take a moment to talk about Perry. You'll hear his name. He is a retired traffic court judge. He was a chief judge at traffic court over a decade ago. And he had a very good, long-standing relationship with Billy Hurd because when he was chief judge, he hired Billy Hurd to be his personal assistant. And so they knew each other for a long time, and you'll hear how Perry was responsible for getting Hurd various promotions while at the traffic court, and Hurd did well. Eventually, he became the director of records, even when Perry retired. So Perry would call Hurd regularly with tickets that Perry got from various people to have Hurd pass along those fixes to the various judges. Now, Eddie Alfano was a friend of Billy Hurd, and you will hear that Alfano was a local businessman, and he often helped his own friends and his own business associates get out of many, many tickets. And he did this through Judge Perry. And Alfano was smart about it. He kept Judge Perry quite happy. He would give him many things, various benefits, such as free videos, free seafood at holiday times, as well as free car repairs. And so when Alfano gave Perry a ticket, Perry would accommodate him and honor that request. So Alfano would tell Perry about the ticket or mail the ticket to Perry. Perry would then mail it to Hurd and talk to Hurd about it, and then Hurd would distribute to the judges who honored the fix. You'll also hear that when Perry, when the fix was done and there was a non-guilty or a disposition that the ticket was adjudicated, Perry wanted a receipt. He wanted proof of it. So Hurd would get him a printout from the computer, which was not in the ordinary course of business, but Perry wanted these receipts so he could give to Alfano and other people. Now, Alfano wasn't the only businessman and friend that contacted Perry. We have other businessmen, other business owners, and you're going to meet them. There's two brothers. And one had a company for landscaping, and the other had a company for concrete construction business. And with those two businesses, they had lots of employees, and they had lots of vehicles. And their employees, from time to time, would get tickets. And they were very close socially with for retired Judge Perry. And so these brothers would just drop off the tickets at retired Judge Perry's home. They called him Uncle Perry, and he always said, bring them to me, drop them off. Again, Perry would then forward them to Hurd. Hurd would then distribute them to the various judges. You'll also hear how one of these brothers gave a patio for free for Mr. Perry. So as you can see, Billy Hurd would get busy from time to time. I mean, he's getting tickets from the local politicians in Philadelphia. He's getting them from friends of his who are ticket holders. He's getting them from Perry, who's getting them from various businesses. So Hurd would get busy from time to time asking for these fixes to the judges. And you'll hear that he had employees who were under him help him do this. You'll meet those employees. They will tell you that almost every morning they would go to Billy Hurd's office, and he would give them names. And they would go to the various judges' chambers and the personals and say, here's the ticket, you know, this is the fix is in, this is for Billy. Judges, you'll hear, never turned each other down. Judges always accepted these requests from Billy Hurd. These employees will tell you it got to be so much at points, it felt like another job. It felt like another job. Add one more layer to this. That's Mr. Moy, right over there. Moy owned a business in Chinatown. It was called Number One Translations. And this business did several things. You'll hear how it helped customers with immigration issues. It helped customers with translation services. But it also advertised in local Chinese newspapers that could help fight the traffic ticket. And it would help people avoid points. So you will hear and you will meet these customers that they went to his store, they paid him a couple hundred dollars in cash, and he led them to believe, and his employees under him led these customers to believe, you're not going to get any points. Some people said he guaranteed no points. How can you do that? How can you guarantee a customer no points? even told his customers, don't even go to court. You don't need to go. Guaranteed no points, don't even go to court. Pretty good business. And he was able to do that because he steered certain cases. He would ask for continuances, and he would get his customers often into Judge Tynes' courtroom, or sometimes Judge Singletary, because that's who he had the contact with. He was very close with Judge Tynes. You'll hear that he even had this word for her, an affectionate term in Chinese, that's mom. He called her mom, sort of like godmother, a mom. And they were very close, and they socialized, and he would communicate with her regularly, and she would communicate with him. He knew her schedule. He knew when she was on vacation. He knew when she was sitting in night court. He would fax her documents saying, these customers are of mine will be in your courtroom. Well, the cases will be in the courtroom. The customers were rarely in the courtroom. And she found them not guilty. And you will also hear Singletary did the same thing. That way, Moy lined his pockets with cash from his customers, and the Commonwealth and the city got no funds. Last layer, Judge Bruna. You see two red lines. You will hear how Judge Bruno is good friends with retired Judge Perry. You'll hear about their relationship. You'll hear some phone calls between the two of them. You also hear, as I already said, that Judge Bruno didn't sit much at the traffic court, only on occasion as a substitute judge. But the evidence will show that he participated in ticket fixing. You will hear how his high school friend got a speeding ticket. And you will meet this friend of his, and he will say that I got this speeding ticket, and I was concerned about points, so I met with Judge Bruno. I met with him at his courthouse in his chambers in Chester County, because that's where he sat most of the time. And I showed him my ticket, and I told him about the ticket. And what did Judge Bruno say? He said, I'll look into it, and yes, he did. You will hear that Bruno gave a note with the ticket holder, his friend's name and citation number on it. He gave it to Billy Hurd at a party, handed him a note. You will know that was a request for a fix. Handed it to him at a party. But what happens is something goes wrong. The high school friend never shows up for his hearing, and he gets notice that he's found guilty. He's found guilty and he gets points on his license. Well, Judge Bruno didn't like that. He thought the fix was in when he went to Billy Hurd at a party. So what does he do? He tries for a second time for the fix. He goes directly to retired Judge Perry. And you will hear that conversation where they talk about the ticket. And Judge Perry says, I still have connections at traffic court. Let me see what I can do. And ladies and gentlemen, you'll hear what he did. The rest is ticket history. You will hear how that ticket, Billy Hurd and Judge Perry trying to help Judge Bruno, how that ticket was appealed, how a lawyer was obtained to handle the appeal, how there was a fee for the appeal, and on appeal, the points got knocked out. And all of this happened without the ticket holder even knowing. Let me take a moment to talk about the personals and the courtroom officers who worked for these judges. They were important cogs in the wheel of ticket fixing at traffic court. They will give you the insider's view, what really happens in the back rooms and behind the scenes with this ticket fixing. Bear in mind, these personals, they don't want to be here. They're very loyal to the judges that hired them. They work closely with these judges for years. Some are nervous to be here. They're very uncomfortable. You will also hear that they received what's called immunity from the government. And that means they cannot be criminally charged for their role in the ticket fixing as long as they testify truthfully. And what will they tell you? What will they tell you is that each one of these judges that they worked closely for fixed tickets. Each one of them participated in the scheme. And they know that. They know that because they physically walked the ticket fixes back and forth among the judges' courtrooms. Looking at that chart, you can see those arrows. Think of those arrows as the personal assistants. scurrying among the judge's chambers to communicate the fix. Two of the judges, two of the personals will tell you when they were hired, they didn't know anything about this. But their judges introduced them to the ticket fixing scheme. You will hear that Judge Mulgrew said to his personal, "Listen, from time to time, other judges, other staff will give you names. Just pass them along to me." Judge Singletary told his personal, "Judges help each other to dismiss certain tickets." That's how they were introduced to the scheme. Now, often you'll hear that each one of these personals will tell you that their judge, sometimes, a couple times a month, would give them names. Would give them names of friends, constituents of politicians, people with connections who had tickets, whose hearing, whose trial was coming up. And they would give the names, and the personals knew that to mean that this case was designated for a fix. So the first thing the personals would do would they would type the name or the citation number into the traffic court computer database. And the reason they did that was to find out when the hearing date was, when the trial date was. If it was that day, the judge gives them a name and it's that day, the personal assistant, like the arrow showed, would deliver that ticket fix request for Sullivan, for Singletary, for Times, that morning to the other personals in whatever room they were in. Sometimes they would do it verbally. Others had a different system. They would write it down on an index card. They'd write the ticket holder's name or the citation number, and sometimes they even wrote their judge's name because that's the one who's making the fix request. And they would deliver it to another personal, either by hand, if the personal wasn't there, leave it on the keyboard. That's because everybody understood what this index card meant. That's because everybody understood the verbal request, look out for this ticket, what was really going on. Now, when the personal got a name from a judge, and if that hearing wasn't that day, if the trial wasn't that day, let's say it was the following week or in 2 weeks, they had to keep track of it because they didn't know which judge to bring the fix to. And you'll hear that they each had different methods. Some wrote it out on an index card and kept it in a coupon container. Another kept it in her purse. So they would look through it, and when that hearing came up, they would deliver the index card. You'll also hear another personal, her method was when the judge gave her a name, and if the hearing was in a couple days or weeks, she wrote it on her calendar. This was so ingrained, they each had their own method of keeping track of their judges' fixes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the courtrooms at traffic court. You notice that there's benches where the ticket holders sit. Then there's flags on what's called the bench, where there's the Commonwealth seal, and that's where the judge sits. And pay attention to that little door, that brown door in the right-hand corner of the room. That door is not open for the public. That door is a private door. The public goes in through the corridors on the side. The picture of the door is not in this one. That back door is private area. And you will hear that that was where it happened. That was behind the scenes, ladies and gentlemen. That is where the personals and the courtroom staff delivered the fix requests for the judges before they took the bench. It's where they dropped off the index cards. That's where they verbally said, "This is for Lowry." You will also hear, it's also called the robing room. That's where the judge would be to put on his or her robe before taking the bench. And you'll hear that some of the personals met the judges right in that robing room before they took the bench and gave them the names of the ticket holders that were to be fixed when the judge took the bench. And they did it in that back room, in the robing room, when only two people were present, the personal and the judge, so no one else would hear. You'll also hear a couple who use the index cards. If they got an index card from another judge's personal in the morning, they had to let their judge know. They will tell you they clicked it on outside the file. Just like that, they'd have a name, who was making the request. This is for Billy. This is for Larry. This is for Mulgrew. Clicked it on. So the judge, when he or she took the bench, they knew They knew that this one was designated for a fix. And you'll hear how Judge Sullivan looked at the card, placed it on a pile. You'll hear other judges did that too. Some of the personals would fold it up because they didn't want people to see. Some of them would put it inside. They all had their different methods, but it was all secretive. And you'll hear after Judge Sullivan or some of the Judge Mulgrew read the card, put it aside, guess what the personals did at the end of the day? They grabbed them and they shredded them, tore them up. You will also hear that some personals and courtroom officers that didn't use the index cards discreetly told the judge in court, quietly. You will hear Judge Lowry's personal. When the judge was on the bench right here, the personal stood right on the side like this. And when a case was called that was designated to be fixed, the personal would look at Judge Lowry, they would make contact, and he'd nod. A gesture. Talking in code, but they both understood what it meant. That case the fix was in, give it special treatment. Somebody from the inner circle, from the VIP club. You'll also hear a courtroom officer who would look up at the judge and whisper, "This one's for Billy. This one's for Sullivan. This one's for Mulgrew." Others' personals would put the files, the cases to be fixed, in the left-hand side of the judge's bench. That was the pile to be fixed. They all have their different methods, and they're all going to tell you about that. They will also tell you three more things. They will tell you that this system worked. Why else would their judges request fixes of other judges if they didn't honor requests from other judges? Why would they do it time after time? That the tickets with the index cards, the tickets with the whispers in the courtroom, the nods, the gestures, they got better outcomes overall than the rest. They will also tell you that they always got approval when they passed along a request for a fix, that they weren't acting on their own unilaterally, that their judges gave them their names or approved the names. They will also tell you that it happens multiple times. Some would say, well, we would go a week without any requests, but then the next week maybe there were five requests. Or every, you know, so we'd get requests from Billy Hurd three times a week, or my judge would give me names maybe every other week. It was a regular occurrence. As I said, the charges highlight 50 tickets that were fixed by these defendants. You will know that these 50 tickets were fixed because it's corroborated by the dozens of traffic court employees who will come in here and tell you this is how the system worked. While the ticket fixing was rampant, they took measures to keep it covert. The subtle nods, the looks in the courtroom, the index cards, the behind the scenes in the roving rooms, the quiet reminders and whispers to the judges on the bench. That's them talking in code, ladies and gentlemen. Ask yourselves, why didn't a personal stand up at the beginning of a hearing day and announce, hey, everybody, if you're a friend of Mikey Sullivan's from the neighborhood, just come up here, your case is being dismissed. If you contributed and supported Singletary's campaign, you can go. No need to be here. Why didn't they do that? Because they're keeping it secret from the rest of the public. Because the people who did not have these personal connections were not to know about it. I keep using the term ticket fixing. Not surprisingly, the witnesses who come in here, the court staff, the personals, the ticket holders, the politicians that you will hear, do not like to use the term fix. It's considered taboo. Rather, they're going to use terms like I was looking for help, I was looking for a hookup, I wanted to beat the ticket, I wanted it knocked out. Some of the staff call it consideration. Hey, can you give some consideration to this ticket? Can you look out for it? Keep an eye on it. Make sure no one gets hurt. Using the term fixed made people uncomfortable. Instead, they use these code words. You will also hear how Judge Sullivan's ticket fixing extended beyond the courtroom. He arranged to fix tickets at his bar in South Philadelphia. You will hear how friends dropped off their tickets and left them for his attention at this bar. Often he would talk to some of them at the bar, and that's when the ticket fixing arrangements were first made. So why did these judges do it? They didn't take any money. Why did they do it? Remember, you will hear that they are elected judges here in Philadelphia. And their friends and family and neighbors and local politicians supported their campaigns. So they get to help people in their inner circle. And meanwhile, the city and the Commonwealth lose funds. Defendants were charged with conspiracy in this ticket-fixing scheme. You'll hear how they worked together, they passed along requests to fix tickets, and they honored each other's requests. They worked so well together, it was so tightly ingrained and understood that they didn't even have to speak to know what to do. They knew what the index card meant. They knew what the nod meant. They knew what each other wanted, and they knew what each other was requesting. The whole system was set up, the staff, the reciprocity back and forth, the timing to fix these tickets. If you were in their VIP club, if you were in the Who You Know club, you had a better chance of not paying fines or not getting points than the rest of the citizens. When fixing these tickets, they defrauded the city and the Commonwealth out of funds. And they did that by using the U.S. mails as well as interstate wires. You're going to hear about this. Every time a personal assistant looked up a name on the computer that was designated for a fix by their judge, that looking up the name or asking for a continuance or what have you would go through wires interstate. You'll also hear some calls when the fix was being arranged that there were interstate phone calls. You'll also hear at the end when the fix was in and the judge found the ticket holder not guilty or dismissed that this result was sent by interstate wire to the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. You will also hear that the mails were used. Anytime Moy had a customer, to start the fix, he would mail in their ticket that said not guilty. Or you'll see Judge Perry would mail in the tickets. And sometimes Judge Perry would mail the receipts. So you see wires and mails being used on every ticket fraud. Some of the defendants were also charged with perjury. You will hear that Judge Lowry, Judge Mulgrew, Judge Tynes were charged for denying any involvement in this ticket-fixing scheme in front of the grand jury. You will also hear Judge Singletary is charged with making a false statement to the FBI when he denied giving anyone favorable treatment. These defendants sitting behind me created a culture of ticket fixing in the Philadelphia Traffic Court. It was pervasive, it was frequent, it was covert, and it was illegal. It defrauded the city and the Commonwealth of funds. At the end of this case, we will ask you to find each one of these defendants guilty of ticket fixing.